Yeah, but one of the things that's so exciting about today is we're actually, behind us is the site of your soon-to-be biomass storage facility. And this is going to be one of the first of its kind. And I think people who are listening to this interview should understand that Project Liberty is going to be the first cellulosic ethanol production facility that you're going to be using light corn stover and cobs. So let's kind of take a step back and talk about a little bit about the project and how long you've actually been involved in making cellulosic ethanol reality.
Sure. Well, I've been involved in it for the past 4 years, and there was actually even some work being done before I joined the company. But what the focus has really been down two paths. One has obviously been the science. In other words, the smart people in the white coats learning how to make biomass into a fuel. So turning the cellulosic material and hemicellulose into ethanol. So that work has been going on for quite some time. And the other piece has been the collection of this material. Because as you mentioned, we've got the first site here to store and collect. This will also be the first commercial harvest of this size to collect the material that will be used as the feedstock to make the cellulosic ethanol.
So let's talk about that. You have approximately 85 farmers who've already signed up to participate in your fall harvest. What will that equate to in the amount of biomass that you're going to be receiving?
I believe the exact numbers are around 60,000 tons. And even though we don't have Project Liberty, meaning the actual conversion plant here, there's so many things to learn, right? In the sense of equipment, logistics, handling, even the transactions. Weighing, testing, compensating the farmer for the equipment. So we actually capped our first year at 50,000 tons was the maximum. We exceeded that goal a little bit, but what we really want to do is to work through all of the, well, again, I use the term logistics surrounding the collection, the storage, the transportation, and the handling of the biomass. So we're ready to supply the plant feedstock in 2012.
Well, you know, a lot of people, when they talk about cellulosic ethanol, they don't have a doubt that we can create the cellulosic ethanol using the material, but where some of the challenges are that you're talking about is logistics and storage and that type of thing. So one question I have for you, Scott, is, you know, we need to create ethanol year-round. We can't just create it in the fall after the farmer's been in the field to harvest. So how are these farmers actually going to be delivering this? You know, what format and how long and how... Oh, is it going to be over 12 months? Is it going to be over 2 months? How is that going to work?
Terrific question, because obviously the material itself is harvested in a very narrow window. Dependent upon the year, 4 to 6 weeks is when your corn harvest takes place. So the model that we've built is obviously during that time frame the material is collected, but we will be having the farmers store a lot of the material on the field edge or in their actual homestead and then deliver it to us over a 12-month period. Because your point is right on. We can't just run a plant when harvest is going on. And actually, that's not that unusual to corn. In other words, corn is harvested in that same 4 to 6 week window, stored and then brought into us to make into fuel and then high-quality animal feed. And so the cellulosic process will require the biomass to be harvested, stored at the field. We'll have some storage here. And then will be converted into ethanol, and then instead of a high-quality DDG as a output, there will be lignin that will go into the anaerobic digesters that will create enough methane to displace the natural gas use of the cellulosic plant as well as the current 50 million gallon corn ethanol plant. So this is a really exciting activity.
Yeah. Now, from the farmer's perspective, you know, you've talked a lot about how you're not quite sure what the bale should be like. You're not quite sure about what the potential ideal moisture content is. So are certain farmers being asked to have round bales and some square bales? And are you also asking them to maybe modify their storage to see what works better over the next 12 months?
Well, we've got the luxury of some terrific farmers in this area in which we really haven't had to ask certain ones to do square or round. We've got that distribution or that assortment to choose from. The work with INL and Iowa State allows us to do some of these storage experiments. So So we've got this array of farmers collecting. We'll be working side by side where we'll be taking core samples to understand the composition of the bale, to understand the moisture, to understand the value of that bale in converting to cellulosic ethanol. Right now, our process is such that we can take all of that material. But obviously, as we move down the path, just like corn-based ethanol did, we really want to refine that system to maximize the yields and obviously to be as profitable as possible for all involved.
So will the farmers who participate, will they also have access to the researchers at Idaho National Laboratory that you're working with and Iowa State, you know, who are also working on sustainability? Will they have access to those people as well?
Absolutely. And actually many of their resources will be on their farms. Maybe to give you a really good example, about a year ago, Iowa State did a paper, and Idaho National Labs did a separate paper that was basically best practices around different elements of the cob harvest and storage, which we published into a white paper and distributed to all the farmers. And actually, that's available on our website. So we'll maintain that same type of very upfront, very active information sharing with the farmers, because if they're not successful, we're not going to be successful. So we want to make sure that we address all their questions, concerns, so they not only have a positive experience, but a profitable one that moves us towards sustainability.
Well, speaking of sustainability, something new that I heard today for the first time is that there's a question right now about soil health. You know, if you're removing, you know, for a long time we're trying to get farmers to no-till, to leave a lot of that on the soil. And if we're removing a portion of that, how is that going to affect soil health? And it sounds like you're actually going to be acre per acre. You're going to be able to say we can take 20% of the stover here, but only 10% here and none from here. Can you talk a little bit about the work you're doing in that area?
Yes. Actually, Dr. Burrell and Iowa State are really doing some terrific things. That one of our concerns is obviously being good stewards of the soil, and we're by no means are we promoting taking all that biomass. Not only could we not afford to put the nutrients back, the erosion and all the other aspects would really be detrimental to our this wonderful farm ground that God's given us. So working with Iowa State, we really want to understand those maximum and minimums. And I think as Dr. Burrell had indicated, some of our early observations is that it's very minimal on by removing the cob and some of the light stover, husk, etc. You're not seeing yield drags. He actually indicated that there might be a slight increase, and the amount of P and K that needs to be put back on is within the tolerance of what the ground would see in any sense. So the amount of cost back to the farmer should really be minimal. I think one of the real exciting things that he's and Iowa State is doing is looking at, I think he called it variable collection. So if there are areas of the field, if it's high ground or low ground, they'll be able to monitor and then adjust the amount of material that's either removed or placed back on the field. And where I think that becomes even more important is as we look at some of the tremendous developments with our seed companies, where they've already projected the doubling of yields to 300 bushels an acre within the next, I think, 12 to 15 years, that's going to result in even more above ground biomass. So I think the work that we're doing now actually is in front of something that will be a vital part of farming in the future.
Well, Scott, let me ask you this. The circle back, when Project Liberty is operational, you're going to be producing 25 million gallons of cellulosic ethanol. How does that equate to the number of tons of biomass you're going to need from these local farmers at that point?
What we will be consuming is 770 bone dry tons a day, which rough numbers equates to about 1,500 bales a day. And if you extrapolate that out to operating days, we're going to need over 300,000 tons of biomass from the area. Looking at the demographics or our farming audience, that's pretty much consistent with the farmers that bring us grain today for our corn starch or our corn-based ethanol plant. So it's just about a one-for-one. If they're bringing us grain, we'll need them to bring us their cobs and ag residue to, for the cellulosic operation.
So based on the variability of how much stover you should, you could or should take from certain fields, you'll have no problem meeting that biomass requirement and leaving enough back on the field?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even if we go to even a higher, where we're taking 1.5 tons an acre, that's still below the 25% that's been published in many white papers. So, again, I think we heard today that we're all very focused on being good stewards of the soil, and we want to make sure that this isn't something that has concern for the farmer or the landowner.
So to sort of wrap up, there's a lot of criticism right now, you know, people who don't understand how ethanol works and don't think that cellulosic is feasible, or criticize the storage and the logistics. I mean, we're sitting here, I'm looking at the site where you're going to be building a storage facility. You know, behind us, you have an operational corn ethanol plant, soon to be your cellulosic site. What do you say to those people who are opposed to something that they haven't even given a chance?
Boy, that's probably a longer answer than we have time for today, and maybe be a little more colorful than what I should openly discuss. You know, I guess a lot of our critics, I truly believe, are really concerned as us as an industry, as a competitor, in the sense that if you look at all of the liquid transportation fuels, the ethanol industry is only second to Canada as providing liquid fuels. That means we're a heck of a threat to some people out there. So you can either attack ethanol or you can attack agriculture, and by kicking one in the knee, you bruise the other. So I guess back to your fundamental question is, what do you say to those people? Well, we're a 12.5 billion gallon industry. We've got some things, some hurdles in front of us, but we've got an energy bill out there that calls for 36 billion gallons of ethanol. That's E27. In other words, 27% ethanol in our gasoline supply by 2022. Our government and our country is committing to keeping rural America alive, making farmers profitable, and reducing our dependence on foreign oil. So your fundamental question, what do I say to those people? I guess it's as simple as the proof is in the pudding. I mean, we are moving dirt. We are going forward. We have every intention in meeting our country's demand for ethanol and reducing our dependence on foreign oil.
So can you say with confidence that the next several years, consumers, are, at least in Iowa anyway, are going to be filling up their tanks with cellulosic ethanol?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. We've got some very aggressive plans to not only commercialize across the 27 POET plants, but move across other corn-based ethanol plants within the Corn Belt, and then look at other applications outside the Corn Belt. Jeff Breun, our CEO, laid out a 3.5 billion gallon vision that is in those three buckets. Quite an aggressive plan, but one that with ingenuity and the support of government and the farmers and others will become a reality.
Great. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.